We'll call the December 14th, 2017 Las Vegas Stadium Authority Board to order. Welcome to UNLV this day. I just mentioned that when the county was generous enough to offer the use of their chambers, which is nearly a year ago, we knew that today was the one day when the commission chambers would not be available. So UNLV was kind enough to let us kind of come full circle. We started the Tourism Infrastructure Committee in this room over 2 years ago, moved to the Stan Fulton Building later, but it's for a few of us kind of like coming home again. So we hope that's beneficial going forward, I guess. We'll start by calling the roll. Vice Chair Epstein is unavoidably detained with something that came up that was something he needed to attend to, so he will not be able to be here today. Mr. Hahn, are you on the phone?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
That was Mr. Hahn, in case anybody wondered. Mr. Hornbuckle?
Present.
Ms. Jones-Blackhurst, are you on the phone? Thank you, Ms. Jones-Blackhurst. Mr. Newcomb?
Here.
Mr. White?
Here.
Mr. Taberti?
Present.
Mr. Evans?
Present.
We do have a quorum. So thank you all for being here and for remembering where we were meeting. With that, we'll open up item number two, which is public comment. We are somewhat time constrained today, so we will ask that you limit any public comment you have to 2 minutes today. There will be a public comment period prior, or now, prior to the rest of the agenda. We ask that public comment during this period is contained to agenda items, and then we will have a public comment period at the end of the meeting, and that request to contain it to just the agenda items does not apply to the comment period at the end of the meeting. So do we have any members of the public that would like to provide a comment to the board? Welcome. We do not have a clock. I apologize. We do have a timekeeper with a little bell that she will ring once we reach the 2 minute mark. Thank you very much.
Okay. Am I ready? Please. Well, good afternoon, distinguished stadium board. My name is Catherine Duncan. I'm president of the Las Vegas Ward 5 Chamber of Commerce. Our chairman is a former assemblyman, Harvey Mumford. He asked me to come down today to remind you of why he voted for the stadium bill. Mr. Mumford, who was a Nevada State Assemblyman for District 6, served in the State Assembly from 2005 to 2017. He voted to spend $750 million of public funds because he was expecting the community to benefit. He wondered, how can the city benefit from such a project? How can neighborhoods benefit? How can the state benefit? And above all, how can the Raiders benefit from our community? The Raiders should have some expectations from us as a community. The Raiders should expect us to have a clean, safe environment. They should expect us to have a state-of-the-art intercity light rail transit system. They should expect an educated, trained, and skilled workforce. They should expect a place for their players to go where they can enjoy their own cultural heritage, such as the Moulin Rouge, the West Side, Assembly District 6. Above all, the Raiders should expect a peaceful city where their families can flourish. So today, Assemblyman Mumford asked me to come down here and ask if this body would partner with us. You could become a team player so that we could together create the infrastructure required to bring such a prestigious team into our city. Together, we can create a winning environment in which all of us can be proud. I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Duncan. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon,
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, my name is Mario Aguilera. I'm the owner of Alliance Electric Supply, located here in Las Vegas, Nevada. I was wondering if it might be permissible for me to hand out a couple of documents. Is that permissible for me to approach to hand out some documents? Thank you very much, sir. As I said, I'm the owner of Lyons Electrical Supply Company here in town. We're in a full-line electrical distributorship. Prior to owning Alliance Electric Supply, I used to own another entity here in town, Sun Valley Electric Supply. Built it up to have 19 employees. On average, we did about $4.5 million within the last probably 5 years in the company's existence. They are still an ongoing concern today. They have multiple branches in multiple states. I sold Alliance Electric Supply about 4.5, 5 years ago. As I stated, I had about 14 years invested in the company. I went to go work for a couple of my former competitors. In doing so, I decided to open up another company, Alliance Electric Supply. And the reason I bring up Sun Valley Electric Supply Company is because of the tenure that they were here located in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm speaking on behalf of the Senate Bill, not on behalf, but the concerns that I have with Senate Bill 1. I have all the experience. I have everything with regards to the state to provide all the electrical supplies in accordance with SB 1. I've also met with Mortson McCarthy, and I met with Peter Dabosky, the project director, who agreed with me. He said, Mario, you have all the experience to be an asset to the company. I also have a letter here by Mr. Peter Guzman, who is the president and CEO of the Land Chamber of Commerce. There's one thing that disqualifies me for being on the SB1 with regard to the provision of the SB1 bill. That was, I was in business right around 14 or 15 years, opened up a business, very successful business. I sold it, went to go work for a former competitor, opened up a business about 2.5 years ago, and that time frame, 2.5 years, not meeting the 4-year criteria. I don't know how many people are in my situation, but that's, I don't think the intent of SB1 was to lock me out of the opportunities that may be presented with regards to the Las Vegas Stadium. I'm hoping to get an exception, and hopefully someone will reconsider, or the board will reconsider. Whoever I have to go to will take some thought and give me a reconsideration. Thank you very much for both your time and your patience. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Aguilar. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Tim Brooks of Amazon Macy and Britter Construction. I'd like to tell the board that I'm currently been working on a Raider Stadium since it began, and I think the outreach program, both here and out of state, I think it's New Jersey who I communicate more than anything, or wherever they're coming from, has been wonderful in helping us to go out and be part of the pre-bid package. And so I think I was the second contractor on there, and I'm still working on her this week, and I'm also bitting a masonry and a tile on there. So I'd just like to say that I think they're doing a wonderful job on our outreach program. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Brooks. Sir?
Good afternoon. I'm Juan Mendez, president of MCON Inc. My company is a certified minority-owned business and meets the guidelines per the Senate Bill Number 1 for local small business. As an underground contractor, our stadium project work scope areas include installation of water lines and sewer main lines. I thank God for this awesome opportunity. What a blessing indeed. I'm so grateful to the owners and management team of TAB Contractors, Brady Stevens and Tori Rambert, a subsidiary of NewCom Inc., for believing in my company enough to enter into the first Nevada Department of Transportation mentor-protege business relationship. Since the agreement signing on June 14, 2017, the interaction with the TAB team has been outstanding. This stadium opportunity is a direct result of this mentor-protege business relationship. Thank you to NDOT, Dan O'Shea from Nevada Contractors Association, Peter Guzman from the Latin Chamber of Commerce, Local 872 Labors, Tommy White and Marco Hernandez, Local 12 Operating Engineers, Sean and Bill, and Tom Akers for his guidance and believing in me to put the program together. To the McCarthy-Mortensen team, thank you very much for being committed to local small business inclusion and your willingness to work with us. Without your commitment to SB 1, I would not be here. I would not be standing here today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this time to share my comments about the Raider Stadium project. Thank you to Raider Nation for relocating to our community to help our community grow and create more business. Vegas strong. God bless.
Thank you, Mr. Mendez. Anyone else? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close agenda item 2, open agenda item 3, which is the approval of the agenda. If the board has any recommendations for any either additions or deletions from the agenda, we'd take that motion now. If not, I'd entertain a motion for approval.
Motion to approve.
Second. Ken Evans for the record.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Passes unanimously. Thank you. I'll be brief with my comments today. Would like to congratulate the Raiders on what certainly was one of the best ground opening ceremonies I've ever been a part of or seen. It was just exceptionally well done. I've had many people throughout the community say that, it was meaningful and it was exciting both at the same time, and we appreciate the opportunity to be a part of it. We're excited about what's to come. I would like to say that to Board Member White that the fact that our staff is so far away is not reflective of the fact that they're concerned you're still contagious. Mr. White is recovering from pneumonia, spent a few days in the hospital. We're glad you're back up on your feet. So thank goodness you're able to be here today. We have four meetings left in the schedule that we have laid out. And our goal of trying to conclude the documentation for the stadium by the meeting in early February. We will be meeting twice in January, once on the 11th and again on the 25th. That date is may have been tentative, the date on the 25th. It's certainly no longer tentative. We're going to need to meet that date as well. We are making solid progress, and we remain on track, I think, to be able to be done by that February meeting, but Mr. Arnold is not going to be able to take a long vacation through the holidays, I'm sure. So I appreciate all the work that everyone has done in order to get to the point we are today. There have been an awful lot of people who have put in an awful lot of time and effort into making that happen, and I want to thank all of them for doing so. Certainly includes the Raiders organization and all of their attorney staff and support staff, certainly Mr. Aguero and the folks at Applied Analysis, and Mr. Arnold, Ms. Otto, and our staff as well. Commissioner Sisolak and everyone at the county has been working diligently to make this happen, as well as the members of the board. We appreciate the time that you have invested in this as well. So we're excited by the progress that we're making and look forward to staying on schedule. So I'll close agenda item 4 unless anyone on the board has any comments they would like to make. We'd like to thank Ms. Fitzsimmons for being here as well. Thank you, Laura. We appreciate it. No, I'm sorry. we'll get that right by the end of this process, huh? Okay. We'll open agenda item 5, which is approval of the minutes from the November 9th meeting. Entertain any recommendations for changes from the board, and if not, would entertain approval of the minutes. A motion for approval.
Motion to approve.
Second that motion.
A motion and a second. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that passes unanimously as well. With that, we'll open agenda item 6, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Aguero.
Mr.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Jeremy Aguero. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Just a brief update relative to our progress over the past 30 days. I will start with our punch list of project documents. I will not go through the same list of thank yous that you just did. They are also very much appropriate in this particular item as well. What I will tell the board is that progress has been made on almost every one of the open documents that we had from the last meeting. Many of them significant progress has been made. We will talk about four of those agreements in your agenda today in greater detail, but I am very pleased to say that we are on track for the February deadline that the board has instituted, or at least the goal that we have as a board. With regard to the balance of the efforts over the past 30 days have largely focused on document preparation and development. However, some of the other efforts that the board has directed staff to undertake have continued to move forward. The website now has 450 vendors that have registered. About 275 of those are small businesses. We continue to relay that information over to Mortensen and McCarthy, and I know that their database is much larger than ours. So we continue to try and be supportive of their efforts, respecting the fact that they are fully activated at this point relative to identifying businesses and reaching out to them. In terms of revenue collection, of course, room tax is particularly important as it's the primary source of revenue to support the stadium bonds. Inside your packet under item number six is the summary, the room tax summary, room tax monthly revenue summary that we've prepared for you. Their room taxes were $4.4 million in September, about 5.2% ahead of budgeted projections. October's preliminary collections were of $4.3 million are below the budget projection by about 7.9%. However, they are preliminary. We believe that that number will fall somewhere closer to 3 to 4% under expectations when all of the information, particularly from the other jurisdictions, comes in to that number. In terms of the entirety of the revenue that is being generated, Stadium Authority Board revenues are currently 8.3% or $2.6 million ahead of expectations. Again, we are keeping a very close eye on the revenues as they materialize after the events of October 1st. Visitor volume in October was 4.2 million. Of course, there was a significant impact on leisure visitation in particular, although convention attendance remained up 36% in compared to the prior year. We'll be keeping a close eye on November and December, and we'll report back accordingly to the Stadium Authority Board relative to those revenues. Staff also began work with Grand Canyon Development Partners. This is our development consultant that we are working with. They have begun work on reviewing all of the design documents that have been provided thus far and developing a matrix of stadium features for a side-by-side comparison with recently constructed NFL stadiums be used to determine to provide information relative to the first-class premier facility standard included in Senate Bill 1. With that, Mr. Chairman, that is an update in terms of our progress over the past 30 days. I've been more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Aguero? I don't think so, Jeremy. Thank you.
Okay, we'll close
close agenda item 6, open agenda item 7, and ask Mr. Bedain to give us kind of an update on where they are. Welcome, Mr. Bedain.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. Thank you for the kind words. The groundbreaking was a special event, and certainly for the Raider organization, one we've waited a long time for. So thanks to all of you for getting us there. And it was the first experience for a lot of our alumni and a lot of our staff to actually come to town, and they were blown away by the hospitality and very excited for the project to proceed. As you and Jeremy both mentioned, we had a good month. We've made a lot of progress. So I think you're fond of saying deadlines spur action, and it seems to be working. But we did have a good month. I wanted to thank Commissioner Sisolak. I saw him here earlier for inserting himself into the project and, you know, giving us a swift kick in the ass, which I think we needed. And as far as the stadium project itself goes, as you drive by it, you see the construction trailers are starting to arrive and the ground has been graded, and we're digging some holes and making some progress. So we're on schedule. Everything is proceeding well. We had a good meeting this morning over at Mortensen McCarthy, and I don't really have anything but positive scheduling items to share with you. Everything is proceeding as planned. So if you have any questions, let me know. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Bedain?
Maybe just one, Mark. Sorry.
I know you guys, the Super Bowl bid, when do they talk about that?
The Super Bowl?
Yeah.
We'll probably know by May.
By May. Okay, by thank May. You.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll close agenda item 7, open agenda item 8. Welcome, Ms. Otto, and I think she's going to walk us through, or maybe give us an overview rather than walk us through, the land dedication agreement. Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, this is Angela Otto. The agreement I'm going to speak about is the dedication agreement, as Chairman Hill just said. And just to put it in perspective of where this agreement sits in the overall, it's still not on.
If you could maybe bring it a little closer, it might help. Perfect.
All right.
Yes, thank you.
All right. So to put it in perspective of where this agreement sits, a few months ago we negotiated and finalized the lease agreement. And the dedication agreement is what transfers the land from the stadium company to the authority, and then the authority will lease it back to the stadium company. That's overall where it fits. You'll see, as almost all of the agreements have very similar recitals about the SB1, and talks about the definitions. Article 2 basically says that the agreement, or that the property will be dedicated to the authority by a deed, and the deed is attached as an exhibit, that the property will be transferred as is, that there won't be any consideration, so it will just be dedicated without basically paying a purchase price, if you will. And that the authority will get title insurance, saying that an insurance policy saying that the authority now owns the land. It's expected that the agreement will be a concurrent sign and close, so it will be signed as part of all the other documents and will be closed on the same day as it's signed. Article 3 talks about the closing being through escrow, and that the stadium authority will deliver its documents into escrow, and Stadco will deliver its documents. Talks about the fact in Article 4 that stadium company will pay their taxes through the closing, and they're responsible for all the closing expenses as well. Then you get into Article 5 and 6 that have the representations and warranties from each of the parties, pretty much the basic types of corporate and authority reps, and then some additional reps on their part for title and environmental and litigation. And then Article 7 is really the boilerplate that is very similar to the boilerplate you've seen in most of your other agreements. We obviously tried to conform them to the lease in particular, as well as all the definitions. So I know that was short and sweet, but if you have any questions, please let me know.
Any questions for Ms. Otto? If you could just talk to us a little bit about the diligence work that goes along with the transfer and where we stand in that process, that might be helpful too.
Yes, definitely. So as Chairman Hill said, we have started our diligence on the site so that the Stadium Authority isn't just acquiring this property without really looking into it and seeing what's it all about. So far we've received current title work. We've received a fairly current survey from earlier this spring of this year, an older environmental report, and some older type of information. The Raiders are in the process of updating the environmental report, which is obviously important. And so we're continuing to get additional information from them, but but the process is underway, and we are waiting for additional documents.
And we don't see any issues with being able to receive that information by the February goal deadline that we
have. No, everybody's sort of working to try to cross that off the list.
Great. Thank you. And thanks for your work on this.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. We will close agenda item 8, open agenda item 9, receive progress report on the UNLV joint use agreement. Mr. Guerrero?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll also keep this relatively brief. As you said and Mr. Bedain said, there has been extensive progress over the past month. This includes the progress that has been made on the UNLV joint use agreement, in particular over the past 30 days. Thanks in no short order to the Raiders, to UNLV, to their respective legal teams. And I would be remiss, Mr. Chairman, if I didn't extend my thanks to you for all of the efforts, as well as Chairman Sisolak for both his assistance and encouragement relative to seeing that get done. What does remain are a couple of minor technical issues that require clarification, such as ticketing system integration. However, it is staff's understanding that the agreement will be forwarded to the Regents for their review the first week in January and considered for final approval later that same month. This puts the Stadium Authority and that document on track to have this critical agreement completed in advance of our work project document completion deadline for early February.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Guerra. And if the board has any questions, Jeremy's not going to answer them, but you're welcome to ask him. No, I'm kidding. kind of. I do want to thank everyone involved for all the work on that. It's obviously a critical reason that we're here, that we felt as a Tourism Infrastructure Committee, as the Stadium Authority Board, certainly the legislature, governor felt the same way, that having a world-class place for UNLV to play football was one of the major reasons to invest public money in the stadium. We're very happy to hear that part of this project is moving forward. So thanks for everybody for all of that effort. Okay, we will close agenda item 9, open agenda item 10, which is a progress update on the community benefit plan. Mr. Guerra, I'm just going to make a few opening comments and then I will turn it over to you. As the board knows, we reviewed the community benefit plan in the form that it was in November. And I think some significant progress has been made there, significant improvement. Again, I want to thank all of those involved, and I want to include Senator Ford in those thanks. He has been a proponent of the community benefit plan since the legislative session. It was important to our legislature and was a critical reason, really, as Ms. Duncan said earlier, that the stadium would be a benefit to the community and the community would be a benefit to the Raiders. The plan that Mr. Guerra will go through today, I certainly think comports with the law and the intent of the legislature. The law says that the developer shall develop a community benefit plan, and I'm paraphrasing here, that ensures the greatest possible participation by all segments of the community in the stadium project. That the Benefit Oversight Committee, which will be formed in the future, is authorized to enforce. And I feel confident in saying that this plan does that. And I just want to talk about some of the things that are in this plan. We have spent time working through open issues, but maybe not quite as much time really highlighting all of the steps that the Raiders have committed to take in order to not only meet the words and the spirit of the law, but to document and then execute on the commitment that the Raiders have made to the community throughout this process. Throughout this agreement, the Raiders are committing to work with a broad variety of community groups, local chambers, veterans organizations, faith-based organizations, and more. There are strong both initiatives for inclusion in jobs and employment, as well as very strong goals. There's a 38% goal for diversity inclusion during the construction process and 55% during the ongoing operations of the stadium. As was mentioned in the last meeting and is certainly true, the focus on jobs and employment and the opportunities the stadium presents was really the priority that was at the top of the list throughout that conversation. They have committed to a community workforce program that has several different components, including entry-level opportunities for low-income residents, apprenticeship programs with our local labor unions and others, and a work readiness support program that will offer uniforms, clothes, boots, tools for those who need them so that those don't become an obstacle for them being able to go to work. They've committed to a first source employment program that will allow all of those community workforce programs to really have the promise of jobs after residents in the community go through those programs. And they've also committed to support livable wage requirements. From a business standpoint, a part of the law is the inclusion of 15% small businesses. And I would say that for businesses that don't necessarily quite meet the criteria in the law for that small business threshold, it certainly does not preclude you from working on this project, and I know the Raiders would feel the same way. We have discussed a goal for minority and women business enterprises. There is not currently a study that has been done to show what assets there are in the community along those lines. It's difficult to have specific enough information in order to know exactly what that goal should be. So we will continue to monitor that as we go forward. That'll be a part of the Raiders working with the Benefit Oversight Committee. There are very strong outreach and facilitation commitments. As you all know, there's already a website that allows those businesses to that are interested in working on the project to sign up. The Raiders have committed to contacting all of those businesses that have registered on the website. They have also agreed to structure bid packages, both in terms of size and in streamlining the process to allow a broader participation by businesses of all sizes and certainly a diverse set of businesses to be included. They will provide bid packages to chambers so that chambers can contact their members in order to really have another wave of outreach efforts through those organizations that are there and do that for a living. They will facilitate partnerships with larger firms so that the size of some of these bid packages are not an obstacle for smaller businesses and more diverse businesses being involved. They have agreed to, when it's appropriate, to accelerate payment processes so that the cash flow for those businesses can keep up with the opportunities that they have at the stadium. And they've also agreed to develop a retention plan in which they will provide feedback for those businesses that are working on the project so that they know what's upcoming, where they can, where they have opportunities, where they need to develop potentially new skills, or bring in partners for that. There are significant reporting requirements in this community benefit plan, and that includes the contractors that the developer will use during the construction process and during operations, as well as servicing the stadium. They have agreed to report quarterly and will do so through the construction process and then will report quarterly during the operating process until they've shown in two consecutive quarterly reports that they have become compliant at the definition of the Benefit Oversight Committee, in which case that reporting can go to annual reporting. And there are also audit provisions in what they have committed to in this community benefit plan. The oversight and enforcement by the Benefit Oversight Committee we feel is very strong. They have the ability to determine compliance, as does the developer, that we see this as a partnership. There is a process outlined in the community benefit plan in the event an area of noncompliance is identified. And if that is not able to be worked out, anything that needs to be brought to the Stadium Authority Board can be. And I think it should be noted the Raiders will bear the cost of this entire program and have agreed to do so. So I think there's a lot in this community benefit plan that will allow the intent of the legislature, the intent that's in the law, and I know the intent that the Raiders have to make sure that there is the greatest possible participation by all segments of the local community. So I want to thank the Raiders for coming forward with this. We appreciate it. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Aguero to talk about what has changed since the last meeting and fill in any blanks that I may have left there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try not to be overly repetitive. I think that you covered many of the changes that have occurred in your board packet. Under item number 10 is the plan. We've included both the red line version for you as well as the clean version so that you can take a look at that and review it. Mr. Chairman, I certainly agree, having spent a great deal of time with the Raiders team on this plan, that we talk a lot about what community benefits mean, and so often it focuses on employment and employers and those type of things, but I do believe that this plan creates opportunities. I do believe that it facilitates inclusion, which is the intent of Senate Bill 1, and perhaps provides the best benefit of all, and that is building capacity within our community to succeed into the future, well beyond the construction of this stadium. With that, I will just go through the red lines that are in the document. They begin on page 2. Under 2.5, you'll see that there is some places where the term authority has been replaced with CCSA. It's merely to make sure that the definitions are the same throughout the document. Also on page 2, under public reporting, again, these are largely just clarifications. There is one sentence that has been added that just simply says, let me take a half a step back. So much of this has been directed on the Raiders themselves, but the community benefits plan, in order to be effectuated appropriately, is going to include the cooperation of all kinds of different folks. The prime contractor, the stadium operator, the concessionaire, vendors, all of those things are going to have to participate. And that is what the clarification in 2.6 indicates, is that the reporting will include all of those efforts, or all of those parties and their efforts as well. Jumping forward to page 4, Chairman Hill alluded to the fact that structuring bid packages to encourage women and minority business enterprises to have opportunities has been expanded to make sure that it's clear. This includes defining, segmenting, or sizing bid packages at levels to increase the likelihood that those businesses can successfully undertake such projects, allowing for contract partnerships and encouraging larger bidders to include WMBEs as co-bidders or project subcontractors, and streamlining the bid submittal process to reduce the time and cost submittal for WMBEs. On page 5, there's a number of notes and nits here that are included. I'll just go through them relatively quickly. Under item C, this is really the item that deals with collaboration. And as Chairman Hill indicated, the goal here is to try and be as collaborative as possible with faith-based organizations, with local chambers, with unions, in order to build upon and leverage the existing capacity that we have. Under item number C, it's just been extended to clarify that they shall provide these bid packages to the local chambers to make sure that the local chambers have the opportunity to then share those bid packages with their respective members. Under E is facilitating partnerships. Again, this is part of the construction-related activity, but it talks about encouraging vendors to partner with folks and also allowing the development of or encouraging the development of mentorship programs in order to develop professional opportunities within the community. Under G, this has been added, and this has just been somewhat changed and fleshed out. It reads, collaborating with its prime contractor, essentially the Raiders organization will do that, for the project to develop a program that encourages long-term relationships with local small business enterprises and WMBEs, that provides meaningful feedback to contractors, subcontractors, and vendors relative to performance-related issues and encourages the continued development of skills and abilities, that puts systems into place to ensure larger contractors and vendors are aware of local small businesses and WMBEs that have successfully undertaken stadium-related work. Again, capacity building and looking toward the long term. Under number 3.1.4, this is certification. Previously, certification dealt specifically with small businesses. It has been expanded to include certification for WMBEs. The goal is to make sure that the businesses that are truly minority and women-owned are the ones that are having the opportunity to participate in these individual programs. I would also like to extend my thanks to Ms. Littlejohn, who took the time to be very helpful in working on crafting this specific definition to make sure that it was inclusive and workable throughout the totality of the project. On page 6 is section 3.1.5, which deals with modifications to local small business enterprise contracting targets. This language is taken directly out of Senate Bill 1, but was absent in the community benefit plan, and all parties thought it should appropriately be here. I think it's important to note that in the event that there is not capacity, as Chairman Hill indicated, we understand that there may be certain areas where there just isn't capacity. And what we wouldn't want to do is create a life safety issue or an issue in which the project would be put in jeopardy as in an effort to try and attain a goal. In saying that, this specific language essentially says that in the event that the Raiders or their contractors come back and say, hey, look, we have tried to meet this small business requirement. We've taken reasonable efforts to notify folks. We've done all of those type of things. And yet we have still come back and found that in one area, some areas, many areas, that it is just not possible to do it. And they've made that effort in good faith that target can be reduced in if those circumstances are to materialize. On page, I'll start on page 7 and I'll roll into page 8. At the bottom of page 7 is section 3.3, which previously read workforce diversity. And we have added the language workforce and business diversity because a lot of these programs will not only facilitate the people, individuals having the opportunity to have jobs, but also for businesses that are women or minority owned or owned by some other targeted group, that they will also share in those opportunities. At the top of page 8, you will see items on collaboration under A. You will see items on faith-based, working with faith-based leaders in letter D. Under letter H, the LGBTQ community, all of these have been clarified to reflect that they include the design, the construction, and the operations phase of the project, and that they include both development and, they include both employment and business development opportunities. At the bottom of page 9, under section 3.3.5, is the beginning of three additional sections that have been added to the community benefit plan. Under 3.3.5, the first one is encouraging opportunities for WMBEs during stadium operations. You'll note that in my earlier comments, I talked about bid opportunities, partnering opportunities, encouraging those things. All of those were specific to construction-related activities on the stadium. Section 3.3.5 ensures that those same opportunities, those same programs, will be available during the operations phase. They reflect, you'll see the specific references, forgive me that they're not terribly clear, but B represents bid packaging. E represents facilitating partnerships, and G, encouraging those long-term relationships and those feedback, that feedback to encourage capacity building within the community. Atop page 10 is a annual stadium opportunity community outreach under 3.3.6. This is merely a point of clarification, but perhaps an important one. It reads, at least once each calendar year, during the construction and operation phases of the project, the developer shall host an employment and business development opportunity fair or host and participate in a similar event designed to inform and encourage participation in stadium-related employment and business development opportunities for small businesses, WMBEs, and other targeted groups. The developer will use reasonable commercial efforts to ensure that the event is appropriately publicized and will encourage participation by the stadium manager, the stadium concessionaire, and other major project contractors and vendors. The idea is to continue to have that dialogue with the community as those various opportunities evolve over the what is going to be at least a 30-year relationship. The last one on page 10 under 3.3.7 is soliciting feedback from local chambers. One of the things that came up during the dialogue was that local chambers will be involved in many different ways, but making sure that there is a mechanism to get that feedback on a recurring basis was important. 3.3.7 reads, at least once each calendar year throughout the construction and operations phases of the project, the developer shall solicit input from local chambers relative to the effectiveness of the employment and business initiatives set forth in this community benefits plan. The developer agrees to use reasonable good faith efforts to integrate such input where it might increase, improve, or enhance employment or business development opportunities contemplated by this plan where it is commercially reasonable to do so. Mr. Chairman, the balance of the notes that are in here are just clarifications. If there are any further questions, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Aguero. Any questions for Mr. Aguero?
Mr. Chair, did you want comments? I didn't have any questions, but I did have some positive comments, but I'll hold that until...
We're always open for positive comments.
Okay. Let me start, for the record, Ken Evans, Stadium Authority Board. For the record, let me start out by saying very pleased with the effort that has been made to get us to this point here today. I want to say thank you to a couple of key individuals. First and foremost, I too want to say thank you to Commissioner Sisolak. He looked several of us involved in the eye and said, let's get this done. So it takes that kind of leadership. In addition to that, I also want to thank Chairman Hill as well as Mr. Burdain for their leadership in terms of getting everyone to work together to get to this point. Definitely want to say thank you to Mr. Arguello and his team for not only getting the immediate part of this done, but I know they did research and made an effort to find out about other best practices and then provide that type of input to the process, which also leads me to saying thank you to Mr. Ventrelli as the attorney for the Raiders, because it took the two of you working together again to get us to this point. From what I've seen here and some of the discussions that I've had, I think we have a document here that will produce the results that we're looking for, and I say that for three reasons. Number one, I think we have language in here that not only addresses employment, but it addresses business and development, and as I brought up during the last meeting, that's important because it's the businesses that create the jobs that ultimately help us also accomplish our employment objectives. In addition to that, the reason why I'm comfortable with this is I want to say thank you very much to Ms. Littlejohn, because I'll point out a couple of things that she's done that I hope will be a role model as well as continued behavior for all parties involved. I had the opportunity to run into her at a Women Business Enterprise Council West event in the community. So A, she's already out in the community. But in addition to that, we talked about the process and the system that's already in place and being acted upon. And what I mean by that is they're already getting a feel for all the vendor interest forms that have been submitted. They're finding out which ones apply to construction. Furthermore, they're finding out which of those actually meet the qualifications for SB1, and then going above and beyond that, they're also identifying the ones that are either minority or women-owned business enterprises. So that gives me comfort that, especially given some of the language that's been put in here to make sure all three phases, meaning pre-development, constructions, and operations, as long as we do similar behavior or similar processes and procedures and reporting, I think we'll get where we need to get to. And last but not least, the third reason why I have a level of comfort is because what's also built in here is there will be an interlocking relationship between the Stadium Authority Board and the Benefits Oversight Committee, meaning we'll have the ability to appoint an individual from this particular body to chair the Benefits Oversight Committee, again, to make sure that at a minimum enforcement occurs, but preferably that we're proactive, positive, and productive in terms of doing things similar to what Ms. Littlejohn is doing right now. So, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure that I put that on the record. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Any other questions or positive comments from the board?
I'll be as brief as I've ever been. Yes.
That was it.
That was it. Yes, I did. Well said.
Thank you, Mr. Hornbuckle. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you very much. We would like to, at our next meeting, move on the naming of a chair of the Benefit Oversight Committee. So if the board would think about who you would like to nominate, bring that to the next board meeting on January 11th, that would be great. I will also ask Jeremy and his staff to reach out to the organizations that are delineated in the community benefit plan. You'll notice early in the document, I think it's in section 2.6 maybe, it does say that the governor, the majority leader, and the speaker will each have an appointment to that oversight committee, and that will be done after having listen to the recommendations from the organizations that are outlined in the plan. So we'll reach out to those folks, ask them to submit their recommendations to you, Mr. Aguero, and then you can pass those recommendations on to the elected leaders. Thanks.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, just for, again, Ken Evans for the record, just for the benefit of the public, those requirements are found in Section 2.2, Appointment of Members to the VLC, just so everyone will know.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, we will close agenda item 10, open agenda item 11, and discuss the non-relocation agreement. This agreement was discussed at a previous meeting. We've made further progress on it. Mr. Guerra, I'll let you explain the progress we've made, and then may make a few comments after your presentation.
Mr. Chairman, if it's appropriate, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Arnold, who's going just to talk through, give a brief recap on the document itself, and then talk about a couple of the changes that are included.
That'd be just great. Welcome, Mr. Arnold.
Nice to see you guys. Thank you for having me here. You will recall that the non-relocation agreement is the agreement between the Las Vegas Stadium Authority and the entity that owns the team, and it's put in place to prevent the team or seek as a deterrent for the team to move out of Las Vegas once we spend all this money on a stadium. So it contains principally of a covenant to keep the franchise, play all their home football games here except for one every year, which they're allowed to play someplace else because the NFL does international contests and things like that, and to not negotiate to move the team. The penalties are enforcement by injunctive relief and specific performance, and in some instances, if they play a game not here that they're not supposed to, the payment of liquidated damages. The last time that we were here, and I guess we went over this agreement last in August, I believe, seems like decades ago, we had a couple of open issues. One was the prohibition on the team for negotiating to move the team. So a lot of these non-relocation agreements have a protection. So until you get to the last, that's a default if they're even talking to other jurisdictions about playing games after the lease here is over, because you want them to be focused on renewing their lease here and not on talking to other jurisdictions. Where that wound up, and this is about where that normally winds up, is that until they get to the last 7 years of the lease, it would be a default by the team under this agreement, should they start substantive negotiations or enter into agreements with other jurisdictions to move the team after their lease is expired here. So that keeps them the focus here. And in my experience, for instance, the Houston Astros lease has another 13 years to go in Houston, and we're already starting lease negotiations with them to extend their lease. So that's kind of the timing that you're going to want to get into, is about 15 years or 16, 17 years into this lease. You're going to want to go back to the Raiders and start negotiations. If you can't reach an agreement, then they've got to have a run path to figure out if they can go somewhere else. So that's been agreed to as or proposed in the agreement for 7 years. One of the other points of contention was how much were the liquidated damages going to be. The liquidated damages are there to do two things. One is to act as a deterrent to any team who wants to break their commitment to a city, because it's a big monetary penalty. The other is to have the penalty be large enough that if it ever gets paid, that the city who or community who has spent the funds on the stadium would be made whole from their money. What's interesting here, of course, is, as the Raiders always tell me whenever I try to negotiate a hard point, is they're putting in a ton of money to the stadium, which they are. So it's already not in their interest to leave early, because they're leaving a bunch of investment in the ground that we, the community of Las Vegas, would retain. And so where the negotiations have wound up, and this is generally also where negotiations in a lot of these instances wind up, is the discussions have been around the liquidated damages being the unamortized, the principal balance of the county's debt as it was planned to be retired in the original bond issue. So said a different way, if the county somehow pays the debt off early, it doesn't relieve the Raiders of any of their liquidated damages on the original schedule. If the county hotel occupancy tax goes into the tank and the county can't pay the debt and it stays at a principal amount for a while, that doesn't hurt the Raiders. The Raiders get stepped down as if the county had been paying the debt. So the Raiders are on the hook to make the county whole or the community whole on the debt payments of the principal amount of debt at any point in time based on the original debt schedule. And then one of the other things that we talked about was, would the authority have to sue for injunctive relief before it pursued liquidated damages? Because, of course, nobody wants to ever pay the liquidated damages. Where that wound up is where this normally winds up, which is, so long as Mark Davis owns the team, then we will agree that we won't pursue him for the cash, we'll pursue him for the liquid, we'll sue for injunctive to stop him from doing something. But if he ever sells the team to anyone else, we're not making that same commitment because we don't have that same relationship with that somebody else. So that was the compromise position there. The rest of the document remains the way that the rest of the document was. I'm happy to go through any of it or answer any other questions on nuances on this document. There was one more thing, by the way, that we added to this, which was the, and I knew I had it over here so I'd forget about it, was the targeted tax language. So in a lot of stadium transactions, the legislation is put into place that exempts certain things from ad valorem tax and other taxes, and those taxes don't exist. For instance, there's not a locker tax on every player that comes and plays a football game in the state of Nevada. There's not one in Texas either. But so the idea of the targeted tax language is to give the Raiders or Stadco and Teamco the comfort that should the legislature or the city or the county impose a tax that is targeted, directed at them, not just a general increase in the sales tax, but a tax that's directed at the team or its players, then there would be a remedy for Teamco or Stadco. And the remedy is, if there is such a targeted tax, and that language is at the back of your book behind the non-relocation agreement, if there is such a targeted tax, the team basically does not have to comply with the non-relocation agreement, that they are free to move so long as they move within 36 months of the tax being imposed and that they pay the tax. If they contest the tax and try to argue that it doesn't apply to them, then they still have to comply with their obligations under this agreement so long as they're contesting the tax. What this provision does is it is a huge disincentive, as it should be, for governments to try to target this particular entity with a tax, because that's not part of the overall business deal as we sit here right now. And Jeremy and I have tried to limit targeted tax to just those things that are targeted and not taxes of general application. A targeted tax does include any change in the law as to ad valorem tax. As you might remember, right now, the stadium and all of the improvements in the stadium that are owned by the authority are not subject to ad valorem tax, and the leasehold interest of Stadco, the Raiders, is not subject to ad valorem tax right now. The Raiders' equipment and things that the Raiders own, the team and Stadco, is subject to ad valorem tax. Should that regime change, it gives the Raiders the remedies to relocate, if you will. Going back to the other understanding that it's a remedy for them to relocate, but they still have a huge amount of money spent here. So I'm not sure what a great remedy is for them, but it gives them a remedy. Now I'm ready to answer any questions that anybody has.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. And on the targeted tax issue, we did discuss that particular issue. I mentioned that we would be bringing that back to the board when we discussed this in August. The situation with the Raiders is different than it is with any other business in that they've agreed to come, and if they are going to leave, they've agreed to pay significant liquidated damages if they do so. So we've kind of, and the example I used at the time was, we have them kind of tied down, and we don't want to put them in a position, we don't think it's fair that we put them in a position that while they are tied down, we can kind of kick them with impunity. This provision would diminish the possibility that that would happen. As you said, they are already very invested, regardless of the non-relocation agreement, but we are trying to provide a level playing field to the extent that we can. So that was the reason behind that. Are there any questions, comments from the board?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Mr. Hornbuckle?
Just maybe a couple. The targeted tax, does this exist in other like-minded documents in the
league?
I could imagine this is the first time.
Yeah, no, this is not the first time. Teams all throughout the industry are wary of a ticket tax or a parking tax just on their venues or any other kind of tax. The biggest one is what's called a locker tax, which is you tax every player, whoever comes into the stadium, and all you do is you do it for all professional sports, right? And a targeted tax under here would be one that attacks all professional sports, not just football, because the idea is that it is against a category of which they are the largest part of. And so it is common, all the documents that I have done, the five or six stadiums that I've done, there is targeted tax protection. A lot of times it's a discount against rent, it's other things like that. There is no rent here because they're putting a significant capital investment in, so there's no rent. So we had to come up with a different kind of remedy, but there's always a remedy for targeted tax provisions.
And then, thank you, and then in the pending legislative tax before the Senate and the House today. Is there anything in that that we know of that will impact this?
The tax bill right now, depending on grandfathers and waivers, would not impact this. All it would do as we sit here right now is to make tax-exempt bonds not tax-exempt bonds and taxable bonds and increase the cost of the of the stadium unless there's a grandfather provision that allows this. And you want to speak more to that, you can.
I'm happy to speak to it. I want to be cautious about making a comment about pending federal legislation that I may only know a portion of. But I can tell you that we have been contacted relative to that particular provision and have been asked to provide information relative to this project so that federal legislators can take it under consideration.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. Evans?
Just another positive comment here. Happy to see that we have a mechanism in there. I'm referring to the liquidated damages that's done in a fair manner to all parties concerned, but at the same time protects the public interest, because I know that's something that people have brought up. So thank you, everybody, once again, for working together to get that done.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay.
We appreciate the work. We know you have quite a bit of work ahead of you, Mr. Arnold. We appreciate all the help. So, with that, I'll close agenda item 11, open up agenda item 12, which is public comment. Any members of the public wish to make comment? Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Patricia Martinelli Price. I want to say to our Jewish friends, happy Hanukkah and a Merry Christmas, and actually happy Kwanzaa. But also, I have some questions here, and I want to thank Mr. Hornbuckle, Mr. Stephen Hill, but most of you, Mr. Hornbuckle, because I've been coming to these meetings. When we don't have time to come, we actually make sure. And of all the people on the board, and I'm not saying anything disrespectful, but he seems to always ask the right questions for this community, because it is important to make sure that whatever the Raiders are doing, this is will be their third move, that this community is taken care of, because I am a taxpayer of the county like a lot of us are. I have several business both in the city and in the county, so we need to make sure that they're here to stay, because it is our money, our taxpayers' money, that is paying for that. And, you know, we have events coming up that tourists are coming in through the Visitors and Convention Center. I work with a lot of those clients that are coming in for big events, and that is part of the room tax, so we need to make sure of that. But furthermore, that the jobs are going to the people that really, really need it, not the buddies and friends and your relatives, but the people that really need these jobs. For us, as a community, being a native Nevadan and a native Las Vegan, our veterans are very important. So are the families that are struggling day in and day out. We have more homeless families and more homeless veterans in this community now than we ever have. So we need to make sure that those people are able to be part of the process to get these jobs. On the public forum, I checked with the Attorney General, and you can come up twice, not only once. So obviously, Mr. Hill, you didn't know that. But when you have public comment, they can come in the first time and then come in at the end. I know you told me last time I couldn't talk, and I want to apologize to all of you, but to me it's very disrespectful that still in 2017, people that are perceived of color, minorities, women, I don't think we're minorities, but that's what they focus on, that they still have to be able to be a playing field like the rest of the people. I think that's very disrespectful. But to all of you, Merry Christmas and a safe and happy New Year. And thank you, Mr. Hornbuckle, for always looking out for our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Good afternoon, Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Chairman Hill and the other committee. My name is Gene Collins, I guess, for the record. And I just received this community benefit plan, just this package here. I just received it. And I just found out last night that you had changed the meeting to here. So I got in a little later, got caught up in the traffic. But what I'm here for, I'm concerned about the community oversight and accountability, the community benefit plan, the PLA. You see, when Senator Ford passed SB 1, he told us that if our issues was not met, then we could come up with our own our plan. Chairman Hill, either this evening or tomorrow, we will drop off enough copies of the community, this historical Black West Side community and North Las Vegas Corridor plan with the PLA and the community benefit plan. It is being drawn up now, and by the time I get back, I can pick this up from the printer, and I'll have a copy for each one of you all at your office. I'm going to drop them off. More likely, it would be tomorrow. Now, Mrs. Martinelli Price touched on what some of our problems are. In the package that y'all had is 15-cent minorities. Now, when we got off into the consent decree and everything like that, it said 12.5% was set aside for blacks and minorities. At the time, it did not include Caucasian women, did not include lesbian, gays, or anything like that, Hispanics, didn't include those. But now, may I have another minute, sir? Thank you. But now, since everybody has been added to the table, when you say that we have 15%, well, then guess where that leaves the historical Black West Side community and North Las Vegas? It leaves us totally out. And we can't no longer, Mr. Chairman and the rest of the board, we can't no longer have an involvement or paying bond issues, and that is the end of our involvement. We can't no longer do this. That we must be invited to the table, and we must be treated equally and fair like everyone else. And as it has been in the past, when you come with a minority, as you all know, that does not include the historical Black West Side community. If it did, our community would look something like the one that you are going to go back to. And so you all know exactly what I am talking about. So what we are saying is, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. If you could wrap up, Mr. Collins, that'd be appreciated.
Mr. Chairman, I'm leaving. And thank you. As I was saying, we will drop those off to you tomorrow, and we will, so that you can distribute to everyone else. And we would hope that each one of y'all take a serious look at what the community has written. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, member of the board. My name is Melvin Green, principal at KME Architects. I'm here on behalf of two organizations, the Urban Chamber, as well as the National Association of Minority Contractors, which I am secretary. I just wanted to say that we are in agreement with some of the community benefit plans. We think that it should be directed more to having our NAMAC members participate as much as possible on the construction side as well as the professional service side. And also I would like to recognize one of your board members, Mr. Ken Evans, president of Urban Chamber. Ken was very instrumental in our company, along with four other architecture firms, receiving the award for the convention expansion. In that particular contract, we have 49.9% local minority participation, participation with local firms, 16% of local small businesses, 28% of women-owned, minority-owned, and veteran-owned businesses. So it is a perfect example of how the benefit plan could work if we implemented something similar to that for the Raiders Stadium. Again, thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Okay, seeing none, we'll close agenda item 12 and move to agenda item 13. I'd like to entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Ken Evans, second.
Motion second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Okay.
Thank you.
Aye.